take it.
How are you? Good. We're getting, well, we have milk, but we don't have a container, so we're getting...
I'm just going to take a cup of tea. I'm a tea drinker anyway, so...
Okay. So I am going to welcome you back.
Okay, thank you.
Brunch.
I appreciate it.
There is someone who sponsored a full day of learning today, so I left an announcement for you to make. Okay. And there's also a...
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. I'll be ready in a
here in the United States. So I wanted to just take a moment. Number one, please put your cell phones on vibrate, silent, mute, whatever, to keep it quiet. And off would also be very good. If you have to, if there's an important call you have to take, please leave the room so people are not disturbed by your conversation. The other thing that I wanted to ask is, that Rabbi Breinowitz imparts a lot of information that invokes a lot of questions. However, we're going to ask you all to please, please, please hold your questions till the end. All right? And the last thing that I want to just tell you about is that we do have a program called Sponsor a Shear. This is a program through our wonderful OU Center. Gives you the opportunity to do tzedakah and to either honor an occasion for a yahrzeit or for a birthday, for an anniversary, or for a thank you. And it's a wonderful opportunity. It's 180 shekels to sponsor a shear, any shear of your choice. And it's a beautiful mitzvah to do. So I want to just remind you of that. These cards are available at the front desk. If you are interested, or you can always contact me and I'll be happy to help you. My name is Hannah Spivak. I am a volunteer here at the OU Center.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And I'm glad to be back. And first, I want to thank whoever took the table off the stage. I do appreciate it. And also for the Shalach Manas. So thank you. Tonight I want to go a little off topic and talk about Purim a little bit, as opposed to...
But don't forget to mention...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. Today, the entire day of Shiurim, including this year, was sponsored by Shoshana Dolgen Baer in memory of her beloved husband, Naftali Zev Baer, Zichrono Livracha, on his first yahrzeit. We hope that all of the learning and all of the Torah should be Eloi Nishmato. And as I say, I'm going to talk tonight a little bit about Purim, and there are really two inyanim I want to talk about. One is a practical matter, and the other is a theoretical matter, but one that's interesting. The practical matter is probably something that you've gone over different times of the year. You know, Purim is an unusual holiday because we have two Purims. We have the Purim of the open cities, which is the 14th of Adar. That's going to be Wednesday night and Thursday. But then we have a special day of Purim called Shushan Purim, which is the Purim of cities, that had a wall from the day of Yehoshua ben Nun, even if they don't have a wall today. Yerushalayim is known, for example, to be such a city. Some say Prague, some talk about the Great Wall of China even. And just a little comment, the origin of a dichotomous Purim is in the Megillah itself, but the only explicit distinction the Megillah makes is between Shushan and everywhere else, because everywhere else, we fought against our enemies on the 13th of Adar, and we celebrated on the 14th. In Shushan, we fought on the 13th and the 14th. We rested on the 15th. That's why Shushan had its own separate Purim on the 15th. But how do you get from there to cities with the wall of Yeshua ben Nun? So the Gemara darshens it, really, because after it says, everywhere else the Jews rested on the 14th, and on Shushan they fought on the 14th and they rested on the 15th, therefore it says, the Jews who live in open cities keep Purim on the 14th. It doesn't address specifically the Jews who lived in walled cities, but the Gemara has a drasha, since the Prazim, Prazim means open cities, are on the 14th, the Mashma'ut, the implication is that the Mukafin, the walled cities, are on the 15th. But again, there's no particular logic there. And once again, why is it connected to Yehoshua ben Nun? That wasn't the time of the miracle. So the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, brings from the Yerushalmi a bit of a convoluted explanation. And that is, ideally, there ought to be a distinction between Shushan and the rest of the world. That's the only distinction that's relevant. In the whole world, or the whole kingdom of Achashverosh, we celebrated on the 14th, Shushan was the 15th. So ideally, the only city that should observe Shushan Purim is Shushan, although Shushan did not necessarily have a wall from the days of Yehoshua. But what were Chazal concerned of? Chazal were concerned with a secondary idea, that to glorify and create a unique distinction to Shushan would be seen as a denigration of the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to make Shushan to be so much more special than Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, they kind of invented a generalization to say, okay, any city that's like Shushan in Eretz Yisrael that has a wall. But the problem is, this is still during the 70 years of the Babylonian exile, so none of the cities of Eretz Yisrael had a wall then. So they had to go a second step and say, okay, when we define a chashuv city as having a wall, we mean it had a wall in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun. So essentially, this was an artificial mechanism, the Ran says, to simply give some cities in Eretz Yisrael the chashivus of Shushan, so that Shushan shouldn't be unique in that way. And the Yerushalmi says, all of this was lichvoda shel Eretz Yisrael. But again, it's very difficult to fully understand this. Shushan Purim should logically just be Shushan Purim for Shushan, and yet we do apply it to the walled cities. Again, there are many issues I'm not going to address about the different suburbs and the Shchunot and Ramot and the like. Ramot is an old machlokas. Is Ramot considered to be part of Yerushalayim for Purim? Many minyanim read on the 14th and the 15th. But I want to discuss another issue that may apply to people as individuals, and that is, since we do live in a country where most of the country keeps Purim a Wednesday night and Thursday, and we in Yerushalayim will keep Purim Thursday night and Friday, so many people like to have as many Purims as they can, and they like to go back and forth to celebrate. And of course, if you're a spoiled sport, you might want to avoid Purim on both days. You know, you'll be, I'm going to spend Thursday in Yerushalayim and Friday in Bnei Brak, but most people have the mentality of wanting to do the opposite. So it's important to understand that this is a very, very complicated halacha, because you might find, depending on when you start commuting, what times of day you're commuting, you may find yourself in the wrong city. You may find yourself in Yerushalayim having to hear Megillah on a Thursday, and you may find yourself in Bnei Brak having to hear Megillah on Friday. So it's very, very important that you time your trips accordingly so that your obligations are going to be properly established. And there are many, many opinions. The Chazon Ish has long kuntris on it. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. But I just want to give you what seems to be the consensus opinion. And that is, the concept is this. The paradigm that we apply to Megillah reading is very, very different than the paradigm we apply, for example, to keeping a second day of Yom Tov. As you know, when it comes to the question of whether you need to keep a second day of Yom Tov, we essentially look at what is your permanent place of residence and where you intend to return. So, for example, generally speaking, again, there are complications there as well. Generally speaking, if I am a tourist in Eretz Yisrael who plans to go back to America, I am mechuyev in keeping a second day of Yom Tov even when I'm in Eretz Yisrael. Conversely, technically, if I'm an Israeli in America who plans to go back to Israel, although for a separate reason I'm not allowed to do malacha because that could cause machlokas, but essentially I don't really keep a second day Yom Tov in the sense that I daven a weekday davening, etc. Meaning the koveya, the factor that defines your status, at least according to Ashkenazim, actually Sephardim may have a different Masorah, is not where you are, but what is your permanent abode or domicile. Again, that's for Ashkenazim. Sephardim may have different Pesachim, and even Chabad may have different Pesachim. But for the standard Ashkenazic Pesach, the Mishnah Brura, we essentially look at where do you live, not where you are. By contrast, in the laws of Purim, whether you're a 14th day or a 15th day, we actually don't care where you live. We don't care where you come from. We simply care where you happen to be on that particular day. But it's where you happen to be that particular day at a particular time. And let me explain this. And that is, this is what the Gemara calls Mukaf ben Yomo and Paruz ben Yomo. Mukaf ben Yomo means you are considered to be an inhabitant of a walled city, even if it's only for that day. And Paruz ben Yomo, you're considered to be an inhabitant of an open city, even if it's for that day. So that's the first thing to keep in mind. The whole paradigm of what halacha applies to you is totally different than the laws of Yom Tov. Some interesting conceptual questions. Why is it treated differently? Why don't I say, for example, that if I live in Yerushalayim, I should have to keep Shushan Purim even if I'm in Bnei Brak? It's a good question, but that's not the principle that we use. So that's rule number one. Mukaf ben Yomo and Paruz ben Yomo. Principle number two is that what defines your residence for the day is where you intend to be the morning of that day, the break of dawn, Amud HaShachar. I'll give you some examples in a moment. Now that's a little strange, given the fact that under Torah, the day starts from the night, right? Purim begins Wednesday night, and the Purim of Yerushalayim begins Thursday night. One might have thought that logically it's wherever you're going to be that night. But we say no. Paradoxically, even your obligation at night depends on where you plan to be at the crack of dawn the next morning. The reason why the morning is so significant, and again, it'll be clarified and I'll give you some examples and you'll see what I mean, is because we know that Megillah is read twice, right? Megillah is read at night and Megillah is read in the day. But there is actually a difference between the reading of the Megillah at night and the reading of Megillah in the day. The reading of Megillah in the day was the actual takana enacted by Mordechai and Esther by the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. That is a Kriyas HaMegillah Midivrei Kabbalah, meaning it is from the words of the Tanakh itself. The obligation of reading at night is a later rabbinic enactment. It does not have the same status. The Iker Mitzvah of Kriyas HaMegillah is the day. The night is a rabbinic enactment. In fact, that is even one of the reasons why we make a Shechiyanu twice. We make a Shechiyanu at night, and we make a Shechiyanu in the day. Now, normally, you only make a Shechiyanu the first time you do a mitzvah. Why do you do it the second time? So one answer that's given is that the Shechiyanu I make in the morning is also covering the mitzvos of the day, Shalach Manos, Matanos Liyavyonim, and the Purim meal, which can only be done in the day, they cannot be done at night. And that's why every Gabbai will announce that when the bracha is made in the morning, have Kavana to do it for Shalach Manos, Matanos Liyavyonim, and Sudas Purim. But that's not the only reason, because if that would be the only reason, why would I make the bracha by Megillah? Let me make the bracha before I do Shalach Manos or something. So the other reason that's given is because originally the Shehecheyanu belonged to the daytime reading, because that was the only reading that you had, because that was the original Takana. So even when they added a reading, they did not want to displace the Shehecheyanu from that Kriya Samegillah, because that was the Iker Takana of the Anshei Knesset Hagdola. Now, because, therefore, it is the morning Megillah that is the main chiyuv of Anshei Knesset Hagdola, that determines your status. So now, let me run through some simple examples, just so you'll understand this. So let's say the following. Let's say that I want to go to Bnei Brak, or whatever, I want to go to Bnei Brak Wednesday night for a Purim Mesiba. Right? There's a big Purim spiel, a ball, a masquerade. And I plan to come back to Yerushalayim Wednesday night after the Purim Mesiba. So the question becomes, huh? That's your case?
Oh, no, that's not. I don't know.
Okay. So the question is, am I mechuyev Wednesday night, if I'm going to be in Tel Aviv or Bnei Brak Wednesday night, do I have to go there early enough to hear Megillah, or can I basically say, hey, you know, I'm not chayav in Megillah, I have nothing to worry about? So the halacha is, as long as you plan to be back in Yerushalayim before Thursday morning, before Amud HaShachar, you never acquired the status of an inhabitant of an open city, and therefore you have no chiyuv of Megillah Wednesday night. You certainly have no chiyuv of Megillah Thursday morning when you're back in Yerushalayim, nor do you have to give Matanos Liavyonim, Shalach Manos, or Seuda, because you never acquired the status of a pruz meaning an open city, and therefore you are free to go to Bnei Brak after the time of Kriyas HaMegillah in Bnei Brak, and you don't have to worry about Megillah. Now, if on the other hand, you are going to stay overnight in Bnei Brak, then you're in big trouble. Because even if you plan, to come back to Yerushalayim right after Shachris on Thursday, if at the crack of dawn you were in Bnei Brak, you have retroactively acquired the status of a resident of an open city. And if that is so, you should have heard Megillah. This is a very strange thing, that what happens later determines what you should have done the night before. You were obligated to hear Megillah Wednesday night, and you cannot leave to go back to Yerushalayim until you hear Megillah Thursday morning. Although the truth is, if you can get a minyan in Yerushalayim, you can read Megillah in Yerushalayim Thursday. But you are chayav in a Kriyas Megillah Thursday. And you must give Matanos Liavyonim, Shalach Manos, and have a Purim Suda for breakfast in Bnei Brak, or at least on the 14th, on the Thursday. Because the crack of dawn of Amud HaShachar gives you the halachic status of a pruz. Now, what does that mean? But let's say I come back to Yerushalayim Thursday afternoon. So I've done all my chiyuvim, right? I heard Megillah Wednesday night. I heard Megillah Thursday morning. I gave Matanos Liavyonim. I gave Shalach Manos. I ate a suda. But here's the problem. According to most poskim, the same way that being in Bnei Brak, the crack of dawn of Wednesday, of Thursday, obligates you in the Purim of Thursday, if you're in Yerushalayim, the crack of dawn of Friday, you become chayav in the halach. In other words, you are both a pruz for Yudalid, and you were a Mukaf for Tesvav. Now, every single thing here is a machlokas. Some people say that even for Yerushalayim Purim, it is where you were on the 14th that established. But most poskim say that we split it. That where you are on the 14th determines your status for the 14th, and where you are for the 15th determines your status for the 15th. And it doesn't even, it's irrelevant if you live in Yerushalayim. Meaning, let's say you're a visitor the other way. Let's say you're a visitor from B'nai Brak, who, after your Purim Suda on Thursday, you come to Yerushalayim Thursday night. Well, so it would be the same thing in reverse. If you plan to go back to B'nai Brak Thursday night, you're not chayav to hear Megillah in Yerushalayim. So you could come after Megillah reading and have a party, then go back to B'nai Brak. But if you've come and you're going to be here Friday morning, even if you kept Purim on Thursday, you now become a mukaf for the day. You must hear Megillah Thursday night and Friday morning, and you must have another Purim Suda and Shalach Manas and Matanas Le'aviyayim. So B'kitzur, again, everything here is a big machlokas, but the simplest consensus that seems to exist is that where you are on the morning of the 14th determines your chiyuvim of the 14th. Where you are the morning of the 15th determines your chiyuvim of the 15th. It is possible, therefore, for a person to be chayav both the 14th and the 15th. And where you live, ultimately, is totally irrelevant. Where you are a permanent resident, literally, does not enter into the calculation of this at all. Now, based on this, the Yerushalmi says an amazing thing. It is possible for a person not to be obligated in Purim at all. Because if, for example, the morning of the rites, so for people who don't enjoy celebrations, you know, you can actually arrange, you can get out of Purim. Because if, for example, a Thursday morning, I am in Yerushalayim, right? I am exempt from Purim of the 14th, and then I go to B'nai Brak, and Friday morning I'm in B'nai Brak, I am not obligated in the Purim of Yerushalayim. The Yerushalmi says, Beferish, Bazeh u'Bazeh Pater, because the days that, or the time, the moments in time that would establish my obligation weren't activated. So this is for the Jewish equivalent of the Ebenezer Scrooges, you know, who just they want to skip Purim this year.
The left wingers, there's Ernst Simon, they say, didn't like the violence of the Megillah, they
didn't want to hear. Okay. So they just want to skip it. Now, is it nachon? It's an interesting question. Is it nachon to create a situation where you're halachically putter from a mitzvah? Again, they discuss this issue. They discuss this issue with outer space and the like, where some shittos actually say, you know, what's the status of an astronaut? And some shittos say that the Torah is only obligatory on planet Earth or within the atmosphere of the Earth, and there is no chiyuv beyond the atmosphere. Maybe that's the meaning of lo b'shamayim, the Torah is not in the heaven.
Does but any yeah. Does that bother you that you can be retroactively chiyuv?
It is an unusual halacha that your chiyuv of the night depends on.
So
I would have to say that if you don't know when you're leaving, you would have to hear the Megillah Misafek. In other words, if I'm not sure, if I'm in B'nai Brak Wednesday night, and I'm not sure if I am leaving at night or going to stay over, it would seem I would be chayav misafek to hear Megillah, because if I wind up staying, then I was chayav to hear Megillah the night before. Yeah, so one has to be aware of that. Okay, so that's simply a situation where it's possible for a person to be chayav in 2 days of Purim, and it's possible for a person to be putter from 2 days of Purim. Therefore, you have to time your trips accordingly. Now, if you, but again, it's relatively simple to arrange it. If you just want to keep your day of Purim, but you want to have no celebrations on both days, So again, it's relatively simple. You can go to Bnei Brak Wednesday night, just come back Wednesday night. If you live in Bnei Brak, you can go to Yerushalayim Thursday night, or all day, just come back Thursday. Or you like this, or the other way around. If I want to spend Shabbos in Yerushalayim. So here's the thing. If I was in Bnei Brak, Amud HaShachar, a Friday morning, and after davening and breakfast, I want to go to Yerushalayim, so Gesinta Hayt, I could enjoy Purim Sud, I can enjoy celebrations, but I don't have any Chiyuvim. Because if I was in Bnei Brak, Amud HaShachar of Friday, I didn't become Chayav in the Kriyas HaMegillah of Tetzvah. So there's absolutely no halachic problem with people coming to spend Shabbos in Yerushalayim.
Yeah? Friday morning until Chatzos. If I'm coming for Bnei Brak, Friday morning until Chatzos, if I'm not in Yerushalayim, I
no, I'm saying more than that. I'm saying if even if you come before Chatzos, you don't have to hear Megillah, as long as you came after Amud HaShachar. It's only Amud HaShachar. So if you come at 7 o'clock in the morning, you do not have to hear Megillah in your Shlam. Amud HaShachar is the definition, the crack of dawn. Yeah,
yeah. I don't remember which Purim and which, but the. My son lives in Yerushalayim. This is a few years ago. He lives in Yerushalayim and he keeps Yerushalayim Purim. And he was in Karnei Shomron the day before. And so the story went, he was too lame because he was in a proper state too lame. Now, in retrospect, was he able to motzei all the people for whom he was laming?
Yeah, that's a very, very excellent question. The question becomes, people who will keep Purim only one of the 2 days, can they read Megillah for people on the other day? Can a Yerushalmi, who, let's say, shows up in Bnei Brak, Wednesday night, but plans to go back, could he read for Bnei Brak and the like? It is a machlokes. It's better for him not to. But b'di'evit he could. B'di'evit he could. So it's not. Is that what he did? He did like.
I don't
yeah, it's the chatzchila. It's better. It's better to have. Yeah.
I'm never thinking about keeping two parents together
and all that. Right. The best thing to do is if he knows ahead of time he'll be the only Baal Kore, the best thing to do would be to create a situation where he's chayav that day by timing his arrivals, that he will become chayav, and that then there'll be no problem with that. Again, even if he lives somewhere else normally, but if he's there in Amud HaShachar, that's going to be Mechayev. Okay. So this was the one practical issue I wanted to bring up. By the way, another practical issue is we know that in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, every year people gave a half shekel towards the korbanos of the Beis HaMikdash, and that only applies when there's a Beis HaMikdash, obviously. That is a mitzvah d'oraisa. When there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no Chiyuv. And that money was collected starting Rosh Chodesh Adar, because starting from Nisan, they had to buy korbanos from this newly collected money, so the tax collection began a month before. So the Gemara doesn't say this. It's really only from the time of the Gaonim. They said there was such a minhag that right before Purim, we give a half shekel, which is really defined not as a... Well, actually, in Israel, a half shekel can actually be a half shekel, but the half shekel is defined as one half of the standard denomination. So in America, it would be a half dollar. It doesn't have to be a half dollar coin, but the equivalent of 50 cents and the like. As a zecher lemikdash, just as a commemoration of the mikdash. And some people say as well that you give three, because the word truma in the mitzvah of giving the half shekel is mentioned three times. So you give three half shekels. There is a minority opinion that says that you should actually give an amount of money that is equivalent to the value of the Torah's half shekel. The half shekel was a weight of silver. That would turn out, actually, in modern computation, to be approximately $6, which is what, 25
a
shekel. Yeah, that's expensive. And if you do it three times, that would be $18, so that would be 50, more than 50 shekels. And that's for every member of the family. I'll discuss that. But that's a minority opinion. According to most opinions, you don't have to correlate your half shekel to the weight of the half shekel of the Torah. It could just be that, you know, the denomination, you know, a half shekel. Literally, so three times is 1.5 shekelim. There is a machlokes if women are chayavos. There is a machlokes, are kids between bar mitzvah and 20 chayav. Some say the chayav is only from 20. The minhag is that parents do give for their children at least until bar mitzvah. After bar mitzvah, the kid gives himself and the like. But this is a minhag. Again, it is a very strong minhag. It is a halacha, so to speak. But it's not a it's not even a chiyuv drabanan. This is a minhag that was established in the time of the gaonim. So the machlokas. The interesting question is this. So when does a Yerushalmi, when do we give machtis a shekel? In other words, if you're living in Bnei Brak or you're living in America, so you typically give it, you give the machtis a shekel on Tainis Esther, either before Mincha, some do it before Mincha, or some do it after Mincha, right before Kriyas HaMegillah. Okay? And that's very simple, because that way you're doing it on Tainis Esther before Kriyas HaMegillah. The problem of Bnei Yerushalayim is, of course, that we have a break, right? We have Tainis Esther tomorrow, and then we have Thursday is our Erev Purim. So the question is, do we give our Machtis HaShekel after Mincha on Tainis Esther, which would be Wednesday, or do we give it before Kriyas HaMegillah, which would be Thursday? So all I can tell you is that whatever you do will be right, because there are different minhagim, but the prevailing minhag is that you want to connect it to Megillah. In other words, as important as it is, in other words, the Ga'inim are mesupik. There are two different nekudas. Some say the Iker nekuda is that since the Machtis HaShekel is going to go litztaka, so part of the reward you get for a fast is charity. And therefore the main point is to give charity during a tainis. Others say the most important thing is to connect it to Megillah reading. So it seems to me that the second is the dominant minhag. But again, it doesn't hurt to give tzedakah twice. So give tzedakah Wednesday, the tzedakah of a tainis, and then give the Machtis HaShekel on Thursday. Okay.
Do you have to do it in the sense precisely?
No, it does not have to be precise. In other words, the Machtis HaShekel...
I have 10 shekels in my pocket. Two people, my wife, myself, is 3 shekels.
Yeah.
Keep the
yeah, you can do that. Essentially, we're not mocking. Now, in some shuls, I don't know if they do it here, but they actually have specific coins, let's say $50. You pick it up, you're kona the coins, and then you put in either equivalent or more, and then put back the coin. That would be a hidur, because that way you are doing it exact. But in terms of the main inyan, the Gaonim say the main inyan is it's only a zecher to the Machtis HaShekel. And mainly it's because of tzedakah, so you wouldn't have to worry about that. Now keep in mind that the tzedakah of Machtis HaShekel is independent of Matanos Le'Avyonim, which is a separate mitzvah, and Matanos Le'Avyonim should bedafka be given the day of Purim, and it should be distributed to Aniyim the day of Purim. Now, what's interesting is, when they have the pushkas or the plates that say Matanos Le'Avyonim, Lamaisa, you can still put your money in that plate, even Purim night, because what you're doing is you're making the Gabbai Tzedakah your shaliach to give the money the next day. So even though you put, in other words, I could give the Gabbai money at night to give to Aniyim during the day, that would not be a problem. So practically, the only problem is that the money must be distributed to the poor during the day of Purim. But you can put it into the pushka at night. Okay. Now the theoretical. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now is part an explanation why there's so much machlokas. I don't know, because with the Shushan and Purim, right, historically, from the time of when there was a large majority of Jewish history where we weren't in, you know, in Yerushalayim.
That's correct.
Is that why? Maybe why there's so much. You know.
Well. The machlokas in terms of how to compute the obligation.
What's the way to go when they give the machatzis? I mean, because if there's maybe more of a tradition,
yeah,
maybe then there's less of an argument.
Well, we always manage to have machlokasim about all sorts of things, and it's not like, you know, Yidden came to Yerushalayim last year. I mean, Yidden have been around in Yerushalayim by now quite a long time. And there were two minhag. But as they say, I mean, the Iker minhag in Yerushalayim is right before Megillah reading. Even though I say there is a good svara from the Gaonim that you connect it to the Tainus. By the way, another very interesting thing, fascinating thing. Remember that the fast of Esther, Tainus Esther, is not mentioned in the Gemara at all. It's not mentioned in the Gemara. It's not mentioned in Megillah as any chiyuv. It says Esther and the Jews, they fasted 3 days. But that 3-day fast was in the month of Nisan, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tesvav. They actually fasted the first day of Pesach that year. So the origin of Tainus Esther is a bit of a mystery. Like, why do we fast? And it dates, the earliest mention is in a tractate that's called Maseches Sofrim, which is a post-Talmudic tractate that anthologizes a lot of things from the Gemara, but also adds things that are not in the Gemara. And Maseches Sofrim seems to indicate that Tainus Esther is from the Zman of the Gaonim. And Lehepech, in the time of the Mikdash Sheni, which was built shortly after Purim, the 13th of Adar is a holiday. Imagine, you'd have three days in a row. Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, Tetzvot. Yud Gimel Adar is listed as a holiday in Megillas Tainus, which is a list of days you're not supposed to fast, because it was a festive day. Nothing to do with Purim. It was Yom Nicanor. And this is in the book of the Maccabees. Nicanor was one of Antiochus' generals. This was way after Purim, right? This was way after Purim, in which he suffered a tremendous defeat. And Chazal said it's a Yom Tov of celebration. Now, it happens to be that after the Churban Bayis Sheni, the holidays of Megillas Tainus are no longer kept as holidays. But that still doesn't turn it into a fasting. So what is the origin of Tainus Esther? Maseches Sofrim records a custom that is not followed at all, that's very fascinating. Maseches Sofrim records Tainus Esther, doesn't call it Tainus Esther anyway, but it records that the minhag was that people fasted 3 days in commemoration of the 3-day fast, which makes sense. But since a 3-day fast is too difficult, they would fast Monday, Thursday, Monday. Bahav. And they would fast after Purim, not before, because we are ma'acher. We always try to delay deprivation and sadness and don't anticipate it. So, Yes. That's right. According to some Mefarshim, this Bahav fast after Purim had nothing to do with Esther's fast. It was the same minhag that many people had later to fast Monday, Thursday, Monday after Pesach, and after Sukkot, and after Shavuos. One of the reasons was the frivolity.
What's frivolity?
Frivolity is kalus rosh, that during Yom Tov people get happy, and you know when you're happy, all sorts of bad things happen, and the like. Now, it's a fascinating thing. If Maseches Sofrim is creating a tainus of Bahav because of the Shichras of Purim, it's pretty interesting why that didn't take hold. Because if you would think that you need a kapara for potential levity, Purim would have been the strongest candidate for that. And yet, that didn't take hold, even though the fast of Bahav did take hold in some segments for Pesach, for the Gimel Regalim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. It's very, very interesting that it's using the concept of Maseches Sofrim, but applying it in a totally different context. Right? The concept is there, and we don't apply it in the context of Maseches Sofrim. That is one pshat in Maseches Sofrim. The other pshat is...
What don't you apply?
No, what I'm saying is like this. According to some commentaries, the reference in Maseches Sofrim that you fast Monday, Thursday, Monday after Purim is to atone for the drunkenness and levity that may have been improper during Purim. Okay. So my point is, the way that found a later halachic development is that there were many kehilos in Europe that they would fast the Monday, Thursday, Monday after the Shalosh Regalim for precisely that reason of the levity and the drunkenness of a Yom Tov. So, and in fact, even those who don't fast, some say slichos. I don't know if you have that minhag where you daven, but in Yerushalayim in particular, there are kehilos that say special slichos, the Monday, that's not the immediate Monday, but whatever, the first time that you could fast, the Monday, Thursday, Monday after a Yom Tov, they say slichos, called Bahab. You look at Bahab. So what I'm saying is,
when? Fasting?
Well, yeah. So what I'm saying is, I find it very interesting that such a custom, Vidavka, did not apply to Purim, even though Purim is the most likely candidate. And Purim is mentioned in Masechet Sofrim, and the Shalosh Regalim are not, but the Minhag got established for the Shalosh Regalim and not for Purim. But as I say, others learn differently. Others learn that the tainus of Monday, Thursday, Monday for Purim was not because of levity or frivolity. Rather, it was a zecher, a commemoration for the fast of Esther. But they didn't want to make it three consecutive days, and they didn't want to do it before Purim. They put it after Purim. And the reason why they didn't want to do it before Purim is because in the days of Masechet Sofrim, there was still some celebration of the Yud Gimel Adar as Nicanor's day. Right, that really depends on the complexities of dating. So Masechet Sofrim is a very difficult document, a very difficult sefer, because its record of minhagim is totally unusual. Meaning, all sorts of minhagim there are recorded that we never heard of. On the other hand, it is also the source for minhagim. The source of the firstborn fasting erev Pesach is not in the Gemara; it is in Masechet Sofrim. Right, that is the makor of the tainus of
Bukhar. Is that
Bukhar.
Most of the tainus are in the Masechet Sofrim?
No, most of them are not. Just happens to be the two things that it discusses is Bahab, Monday, Thursday, Monday after Purim, which we don't do at all, and the fast of the firstborn Erev Pesach, which we do, unless there's a Siyam. Yeah, Masechet Sofrim is largely not about fasts, but it contains those two ideas. Okay. Now, the other thing I want to mention is, you know, maybe practical, maybe theoretical, but it's a very interesting issue. We know that men and women are halachically equal in Megillah reading, and even though reading the Megillah is a time-bound commandment from which women might generally be patur, but the Gemara says Megillah is one of the many exceptions, because af hein hoyu bioso anes, they too are in the miracle of Purim. And not only are they also in the miracle, but as Rashi explains, they are the main source of the miracle. How could they possibly be excluded? So now we have a very interesting shaila. Can a woman read Megillah for a man? Now, to do it publicly, of course, you'll have problems of kol isha and everything else. A woman can certainly read Megillah for herself. A woman can certainly read Megillah for other women. Whether or not there ought to be separate women's Megillah readings is a bit of a political halachic question. That's ideally better to have a joint minyan. I'm not going to address the politics of it, but certainly there's no shaila that a woman could read for other women and they would be yaitse. But the question becomes, can a woman read for a man? I don't mean publicly with kolisha, but let's say the husband has laryngitis, the husband can't talk, the husband can't go to shul, and his wife is a melumedes, or she went to Ramaz or someplace, and she can read Megillah. So, is there any problem with a woman reading Megillah for a man? So now let me go over the basic idea. As a general proposition, once you factor out Kol Isha and these other peripheral issues, any mitzvah that a woman is obligated in, she is the same as a man, and she could be mitzi. A woman could certainly be mitzi her husband in Kiddush, because a woman is obligated in Kiddush. Okay, there are certain subtleties, but whatever. The bottom line is there's that we do paskin. A woman can be maitzi her husband in Kiddush. So it would stand to reason a woman could be maitzi her husband in Megillah reading. It would stand to reason. A daughter as well. However, there is a shita of the Baal Hilchos Gedolos, the Bahag. The Bahag was one of the Gaonim. And the Bahag writes, Tosos brings it in Megillah, that although a woman is chayeves in Mikra Megillah, she cannot be motzi a man. And the language of the Bahag is, because she is chayeves to hear the Megillah, but she is not chayeves to read the Megillah, and therefore she cannot be motzi.
Why?
No, I'm going to give it. No, you'll see it. So the Bahag is a bit enigmatic. The Bahag is a little difficult. The Gemara doesn't make any such distinction. The Gemara says, Nashim Chayavos B'mikra Megillah. So where do you get some distinction to be made here? So I want to share with you a very, very incisive analysis from the Marcheshes. Marcheshes was the chief dayan at Rav Chanoch Eges. In fact, he had relatives who became very prominent Reform rabbis in the United States, in Baltimore. But Rav Chanoch Eges was a great, great guy. He was Rav Chaim Eiser's right-hand man in Vilna. Rav Chaim Eiser kind of dealt with the world, and he left Vilna in charge of Rav Chanoch Eges. And he writes the following. He says, in Mikra Megillah, when we read the Megillah, there are actually two separate commandments we are fulfilling. When Chazal enacted the reading of the Megillah, there are two chiyuvim that we are fulfilling. One chiyuv is Pirsume Nisa. We are publicly participating in publicizing the miracles that Hashem does for Am Yisrael. Pirsume Nisa. So when I read the Megillah, when I hear the Megillah in a group, that's why it's better to have a group, you are doing Pirsume Nisa. But even if it's by yourself, the fact that you're reading the story or hearing the story, you're involved in publicizing to yourself Hashem's miracle. That is mitzvah number one. Mitzvah number two is that reading the Megillah is a fulfillment of remembering the destruction of Amalek. Because Haman is descended from Amalek. Haman is Hagagi. Agag was the king of Amalek that Shaul failed to kill. And although Shmuel finished him off, but in the brief time before Shmuel got to him, right, we're told Agag impregnated somebody and that woman became the ancestor of Haman Hagagi. In fact, that's even why it says the Jewish people did not take the spoils of the war, because many of the enemies that were killed were Amalekim. You're not allowed to take the spoils of Amalek. The Zikasha, how could Mordechai and Esther take over Haman's home? Right? Haman is Amalek. Okay, there are all sorts of questions there. But you see, there are two different mitzvahs. One is Pirsume Nisa, and the other is remembering the destruction of Amalek. Now, we fulfilled that mitzvah on a Torah level this past Shabbos, but Mikra Megillah is a second occasion to publicly fulfill that mitzvah. And that is why the Ramah says, when people make noise or they bang on Haman's name, one should not make fun of such a custom, because that is a tangible way that we blot out the memory of Amalek. Right? Some people even, they write Amalek in the bottom of their shoe, so they're stamping on Amalek. Now, here is what the Sefer Achinuch says. Sefer Achinuch surprisingly says, although we're machmir, not like the Sefer Achinuch, that women are not chayavot in the mitzvah to remember to destroy Amalek. But according to Sefer Achinuch, a woman doesn't have to go to Parsha Sachar. Other Rishonim argue. But the Sefer Achinuch says a woman is not chayav. Why? Because he connects the mitzvah of remembering Amalek to the mitzvah of waging war against Amalek, which is another mitzvah. And since women are exempt from combat, they are exempt from the mitzvah of Zikaron. Now this is the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch says, women are not chayavos in Parsha Sachar. Our custom is to be strict, to be sure. That's why women make a special effort to come to shul, and we have separate Torah readings for them. But the Sefer HaChinuch says they're paturis. So now the Marcheshes wants to say the following Chiddush. The same way we say, if you're not chayiv in a mitzvah, you can't do it for somebody else. That's why a kid below bar mitzvah cannot do Megillah. If you're only chayiv in one aspect of the mitzvah and not another, you cannot be motzi, a person that has two aspects. Therefore, the Marcheshes says, a woman cannot read Megillah for a man because a man's obligation is both Pirsumei Nisa and Mechias Zechiras Amalek. The woman is chayiv in Pirsumei Nisa. Atein hayu bioso anes. Pirsumei Nisa. But she, according to the Sefer HaChinuch, she's not chayiv in Zechiras Amalek. Therefore, legabe that part of the mitzvah, she has no obligation. Now you may ask me, but wait a second. Obviously, we don't paskin like the Sefer HaChinuch because the women hear Parsha Zohar. The answer is we have to be machmer in both sides of it, meaning this is an unresolved issue. So the woman has to hear Parsha Zohar because maybe she's chayavos. But she can't read Megillah for the man because maybe she's not chayavos. In other words, you're going lechumra both ways. Yeah.
He started talking about Kriya and Shriya.
Yes, so this is what he says. Yeah. No, it correlates. It correlates. Because he says that the mitzvah of Pirsumei Nisa, one fulfills by simply being there to hear about the miracle. That's Shemiya. But the mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek requires either verbalization or through the principle of Shemaya Ka'ona. When somebody says it, it's ki'ilu I said it. That's what he means. That the man is chayav in kariya because the chiras amalek is not fulfilled by mentally thinking about amalek. The Gemara darshins, zachor is bepeh. Lo tishkach would be belev. Zachor is bepeh. So the man is chayav in kriya precisely because of the amalek component. Pirsumei nisa can be fulfilled by passively being there to hear about the miracle. By the way, the halacha, this has some very important implications generally. Not only for can a woman read for a man, but the bracha, when a man is reading for a woman, or a woman is reading for a woman, or a woman is reading for herself, the bracha is not al mikra megillah, but rather it's lishmoa megillah. In other words, precisely because of that chiluk. Versus Kriya versus Shmiya. The bracha is made in a different way. And even if a man is reading for a woman, if the man was already Yotzei, ideally the woman should make the bracha, and then the man would read the Megillah. Yeah.
So if I'm not reading, though, I'm listening, I'm not being Yotzei.
No, you're correct. So we have to add a little bit. That is, you're chayav in Kriya, not just Shmiya. Correct. But there is a principle in halacha that shomeya, when you hear somebody reading it for you with the proper kavana, it's ka'oneh. Shomeya ka'oneh. So in effect, you can fulfill kriya also by listening because of the halachic rule that is ki'ilu, you said it.
So we say that even in private, a woman should not read for a man?
Yeah, so the bottom line is she should not. Now, but the other, if there literally is nobody else, so you do it, but without a bracha, because maybe you'll be yotzei. But there's a big question. Now, I want to end one final thing, though. This is an amazing thing, because this would classify the Marcheshes as very progressive. The Marcheshes says he brings from a Rashi that the obligation to wage war against Amalek is only in the daytime and not at night. There is no obligation to wage even Milchemet Mitzvah at night. So the Marcheshes says the Megillah at night is only for Pirsumei Nisa, not for Amalek. Therefore, he says, at night, for sure, a woman can read for a man. The question is this, though. So how come it... Now, this is my question. The question is, why do I make the bracha Al Mikra Megillah at night. L'chaira, if men and women are equal at night, and it's only Lishmoa, then L'chaira, everybody should say at night, Lishmoa. That's a bit of a tzarechi, and maybe Chazal didn't want to make a difference. By the way, one other point, I mentioned two laws of Maseches Sofrim that are interesting. One is the Bahav fast after Purim that we don't keep, and the other is Tainas Bechor that we do keep. Let me mention a third thing that's very interesting. The makar of the minhag of Yerushalayim, that we make brachos, not only for Megillas Esther, but we make a bracha before all the Megillas, right? In Yerushalayim, at least the minhag of the Purim in Yerushalayim, is before Eicha, Koheles, Shir HaShirim, and Rus, they make the bracha al Mikra Megillah. That makar is Maseches Sofrim. Maseches Sofrim creates it. It's not in the Gemara at all. In fact, the Gemara Bechlal, in the Gemara there's no mention at all of reading these Megillas any other time. And it's really, it only has the status of a minhag, actually. And yet, Maseches Sofrim, at least if you read it from a klaf, Maseches Sofrim is Mechadish the bracha, and the gra was the one that was the minhagim of the Ashkenazim and Yerushalayim are largely based on the gra. The Gra, based on Maseches Sofrim, said that you should make a bracha. So that's very, very interesting. So be it as it may, if anyone here, any woman wants to read Megillah, she for her husband or for men, you should only do it at night. In the daytime, would already be a bit of a problem. Yeah.
And you can say Mikra if you do it at night, if the woman does it at night?
It's a good kasha. L'chaira, it would seem, according to the Marcheshes, men and women are exactly the same, so Al Mikra should be the proper bracha, it would appear. Although it's not logical, but
I thought we said during the day she should say Shomer.
Yeah, she should say. But on the other hand, at night the man and the woman are exactly the same. So how could you differentiate?
Really, you could say. So you said really you could say the men should be saying Shomer.
That should be, but they didn't want to make a difference. Yeah.
If we made a distinction, the way the Marcheshes says it, when he presented it, it would seem that a woman could read for another woman. Because she has the same level.
Yep.
But according to other reports that I've heard, that there's a difference between a different thing altogether. Women is not required to read the Megillah at all, but they're required to hear it, which is not exactly the same as what the Marcheshes is the same. And a woman couldn't read from another woman either.
So the question would be whether now this her kriya is not a kriya of mitzvah.
You have to hear like a
bell.
Is it a kriya of what? It's not a mitzvah. Is it a kriya?
It's not a kriya of a mitzvah. In other words, if it's not a reading of a mitzvah. In other words, if she's not chayavish to read,
from somebody who's required,
you have to hear it from someone who's chayav to read it. Yeah, that's
the Marcheshes, there wouldn't be, it seem to be a difference.
Yeah. No, the Marcheshes says beferish.
I've seen another thing, the Mogen Avraham Etzer, that the woman shouldn't even read for another woman.
Okay, I have to see. You said the Mogen Avraham, remember?
Okay,
I'm going to check. I believe the minhag is. Yeah, okay. I believe the minhag is we allowed. I mean, the people who taina against women only Megillah readings primarily say it's a chisaron that you don't have Rov Am, you don't have everybody together.
I think the Mogen Avraham says that women are not required to read the Megillah at all, and therefore the consequence is they shouldn't even read for themselves, and for other women either.
Yeah.
That's the whole fight that went on in
Okay, my impression was that the minhag was the other way, but I'll check it. Yeah.
Can I get your comment that a non-Megillah related form topic?
Okay.
Something really bothers me. What's the...
Yeah, people can feel free to leave me.
A very objective, halakhic discourse of drinking on... It bothers me. I feel like it's...
Well, the bottom line is simpler than people make it. There is a mitzvah to drink. There is a mitzvah to feel simcha. But if it's going to cause you to be wild, if it's going to cause you to be out of control, if it's going to cause you to violate other mitzvahs of the Torah, then you shouldn't. It's also Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky actually.